Hey, good morning, everyone. This is Bobby from BobbyOnFire.com, and I'm missing my compadre, John. He is not with me this morning. You know, in the last few weeks when he has been here, we have practiced safe social distancing by physical separation of 6 feet and wiping everything down. So I want you folks to know that I am trying to follow all the recommendations coming out of the regulatory agencies and the direction from the politicians right now. But so I'm by myself today, and as I said last week, I was going to record what I thought was a funny story, and I have a ton of what I consider funny stories from my days on the fire department and then with the wildland agencies. I tend to think of a lot of things being funny, and sometimes John coaches me and says, well, maybe that's not quite so funny, but I've got a story that I think is pretty good, and I love to tell this story to my friends, especially those who know one of the characters involved in the story. So if you recall some in past stories, I've described how on wildland fires, there's a position called division supervisor, and that position is in charge of a part of the wildland fire. So on a big wildland fire, there could be, you know, there could be more than a dozen or two division supervisors in charge of segments of that fire line. And that division supervisor is managing all of the resources and supervising the hot shots, the hand crews, the fire engines, the bulldozers, everything, the helicopters, everything that's going on in that division supervisor is in charge of. And I had been working as a division supervisor at this point for many years. This is taking place about 2001, so 19 years ago, which seems crazy to think about now. But so a long time ago, and I had been working in California, and I had taken a job up in the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest, and got assigned to a fire. Now, so I leave my station and my crews because of this large fire, and I respond, drive a couple hundred miles, and get to a part of Oregon to be assigned to this fire. Now, you know, I've also described in past stories about how you get promoted on wildland fires. You don't become a division supervisor, or at least not anymore, and not even 20 years ago. In order to get promoted to these positions of responsibility, you had to take classes. You still have to take classes, multiple classes, and then you have to be on assignments as a trainee. You have to work under a qualified person, and you might have to take three or four training assignments before you get qualified to be in that position. Now, I had been a division supervisor for, like I said, about 12 years, and I didn't go through all of that coming up the ranks. I was older. My career started in the 70s. We didn't do any formal, there were no formal requirements like there are now. There were requirements, but, you know, people, I don't think, followed them. It was a bit of the good old boy system back then. So now, fast forward to 2001, and I had taken the classes that I needed to become an operations section chief. Now, the operations section chief is the person on the wildland fire who supervises all of those division supervisors and really manages the entire firefighting operation of the fire. So I had taken the training to be an operations section chief. I had never had a training assignment yet. I was happy being a division supervisor, but my supervisors had told me, you know, you really need to advance. You can't just be a division supervisor for the rest of your life. Now, you could be. There's no reason you couldn't be, but I always was such a, you know, I believed everything my supervisors told me. And if they said, you can't be a division supervisor for the rest of your life, I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll be an ops chief. And so I did the training. I got a task book. Now, the task book is a document with pages of tasks that you have to complete, maybe multiple times, by multiple supervisors to document that you have done everything to show that you have completed all the requirements to become the operations section chief. And there's one of those task books for every position on wildland fires. So now back to 2001, I go to a fire. I leave my station and drive 5 hours to get to this large wildland fire. And I show up and I'm assigned a division. And okay, you're in charge of such and such division. And so there's a morning briefing where I am briefed with along with all the other supervisors on the fire. There might be 100 or more people in this little crowd being briefed by the ops chief, the operations section chief. The ops chief is briefing all of us about what our assignments are for that day. And there's a written incident action plan, and it shows everyone's division and all of their resources and what their assignments are. And it's like, okay, so I've then there's a breakout, they call them breakout briefings, where then each division goes and does a briefing with their people because you didn't have room for everybody to get briefed, everybody on the fire. Anyway, so I do my briefings and then we go off and we fight fire. Well, in the morning briefing, or when we're doing a breakout where I'm briefing my personnel, so on this fire, I probably had 8 or 9 people working for me, and each of those people had, anywhere between 20, from 5 to 20 people working for them. So there might have been, I don't know, there might have been 100 people on my division or so. Maybe more, probably more, I guess, when I think about it. But so imagine I'm doing this briefing, and the operations section chief, who I don't know, but in my state of mind back then, I thought, ooh, that's the big wig, the ops chief's coming by. And the ops chief would just kind of listen in to what I'm doing. He's listening to what I'm saying, and I think he's just checking to make sure I'm giving a good briefing. Well, in the morning, every morning after I got briefed, I would go brief my people, and he would wander around. The ops chief would wander around, and he would hang out a little bit. Finally, after about the third day, he said, "Hey, are you a trainee for anything?" And I said, "Well, I got an ops chief task book. Have you started working on it?" I said, "No, I haven't done anything on it." So I'd taken all the classes, I'd done everything I needed to be an ops chief other than work on a task book because I really wasn't that interested, I didn't think. But I had this open task book, we call it. So for the folks of you who are listening who are wildland firefighters, I know this is all old news, but many folks are not wildland firefighters who listen in, so I have to explain all the details of this because it makes a big difference in the telling of the story. So now I'm on this fire in Oregon. I'm in charge of this part of the fire. And the ops chief says to me, "Well, are you a trainee?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm a trainee for operations." But that's his job. And I'm thinking, and this is a type one incident. So this is a very large complex of fires, meaning there are multiple large fires all being managed by this incident management team. So he says, "Well, if you've got a task book," he says, "you want to be a ops trainee next shift. I'll get someone else to take your division." And I was like, wow, I don't know. An operations chief trainee seems like a big deal. I don't know. Yeah, I guess. He says, "Okay, so tonight, when you get back off a shift, go to the training coordinator," or whatever the position's called. I'll get in trouble for not remembering the name of that position. But there's someone on the incident management team in charge of training because we're constantly trying to get people trained and to move up through the ranks because people are always retiring. There's more fires. We need people to become qualified in more positions. So the incident management teams that manage those large fires, they carry a training person, a training officer on the incident. Well, he says, go see the training officer. Now, I didn't know the training officer. I was new. I had just moved up from California, and now I'm in working up in the Pacific Northwest. Now, the training officer, I didn't know, but the training officer had a reputation. And I'll let you determine what that reputation would be after I tell you the story. You can figure this out. So I say, okay, so I go see the training officer, and I find her, and I said, hey, my name is Bobby, and I'm told that I'm going to be a trainee ops chief next shift, and I was told to come see you. And she says, well, let's see your test book. Very gruff. Let's see your task book. And I didn't bring my task book because I wasn't going to be an ops trainee. I was going to this fire to be a division soup. So why would I bring my task book? Well, she looks at me like she was going to, like everything should wilt in her eyesight. She gives me this look. What do you mean you don't have your task book? I said, well, I didn't think I was going to be a trainee, so I didn't bring it. You always have your task book with you. And she starts kind of reaming me out. And I was like, holy crap, you know, who is she? And why is she yelling at me? You know, there's a theme because I had that one story. I just remembered why is this guy always yelling at me? Well, so this training officer was kind of yelling at me. She was tough. She was tough. And I was a little bit intimidated. And it's like, okay, well, so she has to call my unit back, you know, 300 miles away or 200 miles away, whatever, and verify that I was indeed a operations section chief trainee and that indeed I did have a task book, and they had to fax her to the fire camp. They had to fax her my task book. So they had to go through my files to find my task book and then fax it to her to document that indeed my task book was legit. It had been opened by someone. There was a signature by a training person to say yes, Bobby is an operations section chief trainee. So later that shift, you know, I come back in and she's got the task book that was faxed to her, and she's looking at me like I am an idiot. Now, part of the reason she's looking at me that way was there are several reasons for this, and I'll give this woman's name because everybody in the Pacific Northwest and probably most of the people in Wildland Fire will know her and will know it's her anyway. So her name is Renee. So Renee had been a hotshot superintendent. So she had been a hotshot firefighter. She was very experienced. She knew her stuff. And about that time, and probably for 20 years before 2001, when this happened, you know, there was a big push to get women promoted into positions of responsibility in Wildland Fire. And a lot of times there were decisions made that weren't really maybe the best decisions for anyone, including the woman who was being pushed to be promoted. Some women were being fast-tracked. Some women were maybe being pushed along because the guys liked them. Whatever the reason is. And there was someone on the team, the assistant management team, that was kind of a trainee and could never get qualified as division supervisor. None of the guys would qualify her, but the higher ups like the IC and the ops chief really thought a lot about her. And I think part of the reason they thought a lot about her was because she was a cute blonde gal. And I don't know. I don't know all the reasons, but I don't know if she ever got qualified as a division supervisor. Happens to a lot of folks. They just can't get qualified because no one is willing to put their final name on the form and says, yes, this person's qualified. So being female and being from California, my last job had been in California, I was suspect. And so this tough, hotshot superintendent, now training officer, was going to have none of it for me. You know, if I'm not smart enough to even bring my task book with me, you know, she doesn't have the time of day for me. Well, anyway, now she's got my task book. She sees I'm legit, and I'm working now as the ops chief trainee. And we worked the rest of the summer, or the rest of that fire, a couple weeks, and I work as a trainee ops chief, and everything goes fine. And I keep my distance from her because she seemed, she was mean to me. She was tough. But of course, anyway, that was the circumstance. And so, but now the story continues. Now we finish up that fire and we all go home. Now, about maybe 4 days later, 5 days later, not very long, the team gets called out to go to another fire, this time in northern Washington. We'd gone from southern Oregon. Now the team is going to northern Washington, but I'm not a member of the team. I was working as a trainee for the team, but I'm not on the team. But as soon as the team gets there, the operations section chief calls me and says, "Are you available to come work and continue working as a trainee?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, I guess." I checked with my boss to make sure, and I had coverage. I had to make sure my assistants were to stay at the station so that they could run that while I was going to another fire. So I get up to the fire, and the ops chief says, "Oh, make sure you check in with Renee at training." And I thought, "Oh my God, I forgot my task book." So imagine this. I was at the first fire, no task book. She had to have the guys fax her the task book from my office. I show up, and I don't have the task book that I just had filled in from the last fire. Now I have to go talk to her, and you can imagine this tough as nails firefighter turned training officer. I go to her and I said, "Okay, I'm trainee again in operations. Okay, let's see your task book." I forgot my task book. Well, I have never been reamed out. I've never been reamed out as badly as I did that moment from Renee. "You call yourself a fire management officer? You call yourself a division soup?" I mean, she is just ripping me up one side and down the other because I forgot my task book. Well, the first time I figure I get a bye because I wasn't there as a division, as an ops trainee. Now, she wouldn't give me that bye because she would say, "You should always carry your task book with you." But I forgave myself for the first one. Hey, it's not my fault. I wasn't going as an ops trainee. The second time, I really screwed up. But she rips me. And this goes on for like a 5-minute diatribe about how useless I am because I didn't bring my task book with me. Well, she was right, and I could do nothing other than stand there and say, yeah, you're right, I'm sorry. So again, she has to call back to the station. She has to have my guys fax her my task book that she had just had them do that, you know, 3 weeks before. So I can't, now I've got a third task book. I had the one that was issued. I had the one that I worked on the first fire. Now I've got the third task book because I was too stupid to remember to bring it with me. So that goes on, and I deal with her through the rest of the fire because she's got to check off if I'm getting stuff done, if people are, you know, signing off things, tasks on my task book so I can become qualified. But her dealing with me, she just kind of like, you know, rolling her eyes because I'm the idiot who couldn't even remember to bring a task book and you're going to be an ops chief. Oh my God, you know. So anyway, so that was 2001. I finally got qualified as ops chief. I think I got qualified that summer and now I'm an ops chief. But I'm still working as a district fire management officer, or as we call them now, a division chief. Life goes on. And I go on lots more fires. I run into her maybe once in a while after that, but I keep my distance because, oh my God, that's Renee, and she's going to ream me out because she thinks I'm an idiot. Well, and I was a little bit of an idiot. So now, after a couple of years, I take a promotion. I end up in Idaho. Then I end up back in Washington after a couple more years. And then I end up taking a job in the regional office in Portland, Oregon, and as the deputy director for fire operations. And lo and behold, what is within my portfolio of responsibility for the Northwest but the training center? And who is the training center manager? It's Renee. So now Renee works for me. And so the first time I think I might have met her or been around her now as the in a position over the training center, we had some good laughs about that. And I still love to tease her. I think it was just maybe a couple of weeks ago I was on the phone with her because I'm good friends with her now. We talked about that. Now she's retired now, and I'm retired. And of course, her personality and insistence on performance and doing a good job and excellence, that's what caused her to react to my lackadaisical approach to, I don't know where my task book is. I was just like, I fight fire. And she's like, hey man, you got to do this right. So I thought that was kind of humorous, and I think it's important because to think about the humor and finding the humor in things that happen to us along the way, and you don't know what's going to happen. If Renee had been a different person when I became her supervisor and oversaw the training program in the Pacific Northwest, she might have been a jerk if she was a different person, but she rolled with it just like I rolled with her yelling at me for not bringing my task book. You got to be flexible, you got to roll with this stuff, and you can't take it all personal. Just like the story, if you go back and read the story or listen to the story, if you haven't listened to it yet, about why is this guy always yelling at me? You got to be flexible, you got to roll with this stuff, and you got to find the humor in it. And here we are in the midst of this coronavirus mess, and people are dying. But even with all that, we cannot be dragging ourselves around. Now I say that, but it's tough. Everybody's listening to the news. Everybody knows someone who either knows someone who got sick or knows someone someone's passed away. You got to find some humor. You got to be able to maintain your attitude. And I think this story for me kind of represents that. It's like roll with it, be flexible, be willing to take your lumps and move on. And that's where we are. Now, we've been getting a lot of hits and a lot of visits on the website and a lot of people listening to the stories. And I assume it's in large part because people are home and looking for something to do. And I appreciate and love the fact that one of the things you're going to do is maybe listen to my stories. And so I really appreciate that. And I would ask if you enjoy them, as I've asked before, share these with your friends. I hope there's some value to them. I hope there's some uplifting messages. Some of them, I think, have good leadership lessons. Some of them are just goofy, funny, and I think they all have some underlying message that's worthwhile, takeaway message. So, with that, folks, I'm gonna sign off. I hope everybody's staying safe. I hope everybody's listening and following the recommendations and the rules. The more we isolate, the safer we're all going to be. So, thinking of everyone and appreciate everyone's listening to the stories. Thanks.